From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live Arts Edition. The Misplaced Comedy Group does live improvisational shows like Second City, as well as recorded comedic skits online, parody songs, and more. After the 9/11 attacks, they became known as Comic Relief in America's Grief, and a parody on their CD, The Afghan Files, became the number one download on the music website, mp3.com. A decade later, the group's lead writer and producer, Stephen Grabo of Northport, reflects on how the years following 9/11 changed his views of the world and his comedy. He's working on a movie now, as well as two new pop music CDs. You're hearing one of his new songs. Plus, humorous Southwest Florida sculptor Dave Kellum goes for a Tim Burton-esque kind of look with his new venture, celebrity and custom voodoo dolls. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live Arts Edition on WGCU. I'm Amy Tardiff. Thanks for joining us. We'll meet Southwest Florida sculptor Dave Kellum, who creates 3D clay movie posters, 3D clay custom replica golf course holes, and now his newest venture, celebrity and custom voodoo dolls. That's in about 35 minutes. But first, the Misplaced Comedy Group. It had the number one download on the music website mp3.com in the days before iTunes. It was their CD, The Afghan Files, that brought them fame soon after 9/11. Among other songs, they made a parody of Harry Belafonte's Deo, the Banana Boat song, launching their own attack on Osama bin Laden. The song was number one on mp3.com's comedy charts for five straight months, was played on morning radio on three continents. The downloads helped raise money for the American Red Cross. After their interactions with the Red Cross, the Port Royal Naval Hospital, and work with the United States Marines, the Misplaced Comedy Group became known as Comic Relief in America's Grief. In the decades since, the group has grown, doing live improvisational shows like Second City, as well as recorded comedic acts or skits online. It's released eight CDs, is planning to start production on a DVD to showcase new material, while performing live variety shows filled with sketches, improv, music, and parodies. Joining us in studio to talk about the Misplaced Comedy Group then and now, as well as how the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks brought back memories of their beginnings, is lead writer and producer Stephen Grabo of Northport. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
And you can join our conversation. Call 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. You can send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org, comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, or you can write on our statewide blog by clicking on Florida Talks at wgcu.org/gulfcoastlive. Did the group exist before the Afghan Files CD came out?
Yes, it did. It was a bunch of friends hanging out at my house, pretty much, is how it all started. But the way you listed everything there, that's quite a list.
I don't sum it up pretty well.
Yeah, you did. You definitely summed it up pretty well. Thinking back, you don't realize how much you actually have done throughout the years, and that's pretty impressive to me.
Were you just a group of friends that got together and said, "Let's write some funny stuff"?
I was the production director for Adventure Radio at the time, and I had my own radio show, and so I would create comical snippets in between each break that we would play every night or during my show. And when I left Adventure Radio, I still had all of these comical sketches and snippets left over, and so I decided to put them out there and throw them on a CD. And it wasn't any specific type of genre of comedy. There was parody songs, there were commercials, sketches, characters I created with different voices, ha ha ha. And I just threw them out on a CD and called it Misplaced Comedy. And that's how it actually all started.
So you decided to create the Afghan Files CD. This, I guess, was at home in the studio. How many of these actor-comedians were with you then?
There were four of us, and sometimes five. My actual, the general manager of Adventure Radio actually became my next-door neighbor, and we would just sit around a bonfire at his house and just think up these funny sketches. and then we'd just go over to my house and record them. But it all actually started prior to 9/11, when a friend of mine in Australia that I went to high school with, and he moved to Australia, he emailed me one of those petition emails that you sign and forward on about the mistreatment of women in Afghanistan. And what happened was, you know, I read, it was very graphic in detail. And so, of course, I signed it and passed it on, you know, not thinking, ah, it's not spam or anything. But we didn't know anything about that. What's spam? What? And but I signed it and passed it on. And then what I tried to do was try to think of something to write about that would put a different spin on it to make it look like, well, these guys that are abusing the women are just buffoons. And how do I make that funny or have a general spin of it? So I started writing, you know, notes down, and nothing ever came about what of those sketches until after 9/11, and then we just threw Bin Laden's name in there, and everything just kind of came together, and it was kind of it was a healing process for us after 9/11, how we personally dealt with that horrific time. And as well as try to help others cope with what actually just happened.
How long did it take to write the 16 songs that ended up on the CD?
It was pretty quick. We were done in about 3 weeks. It was fast because we already had those notes from the past, and then plus what everyone was actually thinking at the time. Everybody was pretty much thinking the same thing, and so we just threw a whole bunch of cliches in there. And thinking back on it, some of the stuff is pretty graphic, but that's what our mentalities were at that time.
At the time. Yeah. I have a bit of the Day-O Banana Boat parody. First, how did that piece come about?
Well, we had already finished recording the Afghanistan dating game. And Jeff, who one of my best friends, who was in the comedy group, came over to my house. It was about 9 o'clock. You know, I was like, who's knocking on my door? It's 9 o'clock. Come on. And it was him. And he's like, hey, I have an idea. I can't write it down. I have to put it on tape now. So we went into my back room, and we didn't have any musical instruments at the time. I had a floor tom of a drum in a closet, and it was just us sitting by a microphone, you know, pounding on this drum, doing Day-O. He wrote out what he wanted to say, and then I did a once-over on it, and I said, well, okay, let's just hit record and go. And then after that, I put the sound effects in of the jets flying over and everything. And
there's a camel.
Yeah, there's a camel.
Yeah. Well, let's hear that clip. Well, that song became hugely popular.
Yeah, that's amazing that it did.
It's a little off key. <back.
laughs> Jeff hated that because he doesn't consider himself a vocalist of any nature. oh my goodness! Wow, that brings back some serious memories. We did it, recorded that in one night. That was just sitting around a microphone, and we had to figure out, well, this is our message. This is how we're going to cope with this. With humor. Mm-hmm. And how are we going to get it out there is pretty much the next step. And there was no iTunes. Mm-hmm. There was no there were no smartphones or no YouTube was maybe an underground website at the time. I mean, there was nothing like that. No MySpace, no Facebook, nothing like that. And it took it took me days and of looking through the internet to find something that we could actually, as independent artists, put out there on the internet. And I found mp3.com. And at the time, they were really super nice. They would actually, you would upload your songs, and they would actually print off a CD for you. You know, that was like unheard of at the time. And you know, the technology was very minuscule at the time. It was, you couldn't get anything like that, like you can now with iTunes. Mm-hmm. And the CD Baby didn't exist at that time, or Taxi, or any of those sites. And we were fortunate enough to actually be able to put it on the site, figure out how to do it, first off, and then they had music charts, and on top of it, and it wasn't just comedy; it was like pop, rhythm and blues, jazz, instrumentals, and we hit the top, and it was, I think we were competing at the time for the number one spot for the year with Britney Spears and Afro Man. I guess Jay and Silent Bob's excellent journey, or that movie was out, and Afro Man had a song called Because I Got High, I believe was the song.
Wow.
And so we were actually in competition with those guys.
And Banana Boat
and
Song.
No, we didn't win. We came in third.
But on the comedy chart?
They were better produced.
The comedy chart.
On the comedy charts, yeah, we were there. We were number one for 5 straight months. And it was followed up with Friends in Blown Up Places. And then 2 weeks after that one, Bin Laden hit number one again.
Well, we have another small clip of Friends in Blown Up Places, and I want to play that and go on to talk about what ended up happening with your thoughts about this a little later. So let's quickly hear Friends in Blown Up Places.
My bank accounts are all but drained. They toasted Abu and all my other friends too. Now the Taliban complains, 'cause I got friends in blown up places where there's arms and limbs and shell casings they're left for me. Well, I'll need a smoke screen.
Okay, well, the reason I only pulled those two clips because, frankly, and I think you'll agree with me, that's why you wrote to us in the first place, I couldn't bear to play most of the others on the Afghan File CD. For example, without going into it, there are skits on a Muslim Barbie and a lot of Muslim jokes that are really inappropriate today.
Yes, they were. It was a very in thing at the time, and now, and cliche at the same. But now that we as Americans have become more educated with their culture, those things are a lot less politically correct nowadays, and you won't find a lot of that that kind of humor out there.
Were you confusing Afghanistan, the Taliban, and Muslims?
Oh, everybody was. Mm-hmm. I mean, major news networks. Fox, CNN, everybody—they all grouped them in to one group, and nobody knew that there were different cells or sections or radical Muslims.
Right.
I mean, it was just Muslims, and that's completely wrong now, and because we know that there are different factions and different sects And so, but I keep that CD available to make sure that people still know that this is actually how people thought at that time. And you know, we tried to do our part by raising money with the American Red Cross, where, you know, a lot of people were giving blood. And if you weren't donating your time at the actual site, Ground Zero, or at the Pentagon. I had a friend who was who worked at the Pentagon at the time, and if they weren't helping there, they were either enlisting into the military or giving blood, and that was pretty much the mentality of everybody, because they were gonna have payback, And this was our way of being nonviolent, but to help raise funds and help people cope.
And what? How did it affect you when you realized the messages that were on the CD, which got international airplay, were not exactly,
you know,
right?
You know, when we did the CD, and I quickly moved on. You know, after I was done with my healing process, and I moved on, we have to follow this up. We have to continue the message of misplaced comedy. And pretty much everyone did. We never forgot. You know, that was, you know, that will always be with us. But we went on to other productions, and I only recently, you know, pulled that out of my case and said, well, let me listen to this and see what I did. And most of those sketches I would definitely rewrite or reproduce today and not put them out there. Because, well, basically, it's not politically correct, or it's not – people would definitely get offended. I mean, even at the time, I did get death threats via email, and it was very scary. And so that made me realize, well, I'm definitely hitting a nerve somewhere, so let's continue on and do what we're doing, because we seem to be doing something right. So,
is there any way to rewind or undo any damage?
You know, I don't know if I want to. I mean, the damage is done. It's out there, and it's not, I can't take it back, and even if I wanted to. But I think everyone should realize that that's really how everyone thought at the time. And
it's
having
a piece of history.
It is a piece of history, and you cannot erase that. And I'm totally against erasing history and that kind of stuff. You keep it there and keep everyone educated.
We're talking with the lead writer and producer of the Misplaced Comedy Group, Stephen Grabo of Northport. If you have a question or comment for him, our phone number is 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 1-877-428-8255. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or on our statewide blog at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. Click on Florida Talks. What brought the group to Sarasota in 2002?
I followed a girl.
Always.
Yeah, that's how it always works, right? Yes, I moved here, and that relationship didn't work out. So here I am. So I had to I wanted to keep the name going, Misplaced Comedy. I mean, it wasn't anyone's specific face or name. You know, it wasn't my face or my name out there. It was the logo of Misplaced Comedy, and I wanted to keep that name alive. So I did a bunch of shows here in Sarasota, and I met with a lot of great people, a lot of talented people, and they would come over to my house, and we would all just start recording the same kind of way that we did back in South Carolina, and it worked from there. And we just kept writing. Watching the news. The news is a fantastic place to get a lot of comedic. Yes, especially Florida. I mean, we did. I did a CD in 2005 called Unreal Estate, and two years prior to the actual real estate crash, and so we try to keep on the pulse of things and see what actually happens or unfolds. And that CD definitely did that. You know, it was just backed up on that. And
who are your influences? I mentioned Second City earlier.
Oh yeah, Second City was definitely Saturday Night Live. I grew up watching Saturday Night. Who didn't grow up watching mm-hmm. Saturday Night Live? And
when you could stay up that late.
Yeah, when you can, if your parents would let you. Second City, Cheech and Chong. I like the old Cheech and Chong albums. You know, Earache My Eye and the old National Lampoon albums. So I grew up listening to old radio shows and things like that. So that's where I would get my production background. And when I was a little kid and all my friends would go off to camp, I wouldn't write them letters. I would send them cassette tapes. I was 13, 12. You know, I didn't know what a production was, you know. So I would read Grimm's ghost stories and act out all of the characters and take out sound bites from, like, How the West Was Won, and, you know, take the old videotapes out and record the sound bites. And that's how I would do that. I would mix them in on this old, really old, archaic tape player. But I would send them the cassette tape so that they can listen to it by the bonfire or whatever.
Cool. We talked about your popularity on MP3.com, and in 2005, the group became one of only 9 podcasts available on iTunes during its podcast launch.
That's right.
So what has the internet done for you guys that wouldn't have been possible by working solely in comedy clubs?
Well, we can get our materials out there. Now we're doing videos. We started doing a pseudo-reality show on video last year of the making of our comical sketches and how we came up with the concepts.
Is that on YouTube?
It's on YouTube.
I think that's, yeah, I've seen that on YouTube.
And a lot of them are poking fun at me.
Why not?
Why not, pick on a big guy. With iTunes and Amazon out there now and YouTube, it gives everyone actually a medium in which they can project their voice, and any independent artist. And it really helped us, being on the limited budgets that we have, to get our materials out there.
Did you ever dream it would have this success so that you could actually be making a living doing this?
Oh, it would be a beautiful thing. I would love that. When we do live shows, we really go all out and try to do interactive live comedy shows. There's an old saying, no one will lend money to a man with a sense of humor. So trying to raise funds to do a comedy show is really, really tough. They're like, comedy, what, they think improv or stand-up, not a full-fledged stage show with, live video interaction or anything like that. And where somebody, where everybody in the audience gets something to take home with them, and it's comedy you can take home with you. Whether it's a kazoo or a sticker or a CD or something, everyone in the audience has something to take home with them when we do a live show.
We're going to hear one of your recent songs now, very Florida political commentary. Here's Drill Baby.
Shut off valve on the well. So far, we've been unsuccessful.
There's a good one.
Because the other way around,
That's a parody by the Misplaced Comedy Group. Though some of the skits are pure fun and some are raunchy, this one and one called Billion Dollar Bailout are purely political commentary, right?
Yeah. Well, that's why we're misplaced. It's not a specific type of genre. We hit every nerve. But when I recorded that song, the oil spill was still going on in the Gulf. Mm-hmm. And right when the CD was, it's from the CD Back for More Abuse, was released, that's when it was just closed up, you know, when they just stopped the, but I mean, it's still out there, but it's not.
The issue is still
out
there.
It's still out there, but they actually closed the hole right when the CD was released. And I was like, oh, darn.
Timing is everything.
Yeah, I know. Yes.
What happened to the group between 2007 and 2010?
We had a couple, I like to consider the whole Misplaced Comedy Group, everyone involved is like a family, and we're all really good friends with each other, and there was a lot of passings in the group, but a lot of people, just family members and stuff, they passed away, and we dedicate every one of our CDs to them, and we took a little bit of a hiatus. We did the live and video show from 2006 into 2007, and that really drained us because we go all out for our shows. And by the time we were done with those shows, we all needed a break, pretty much. And then that's when I started writing other material as well. So,
tell us about the short film you're involved in, Perception.
Perception. Yeah, that was during this time. With all of the passings in the group, I was pretty much in a dark place. And so I wrote this mysterious horror flick, a psychological thriller type thing, where a short film where you're actually inside the mind of a stalker. And it was originally called Stalker. And then Capstone Entertainment out of Sarasota picked it up, and they wanted to make a movie out of it. And then they changed it to Perception. And so you actually get to see inside the mind of this stalker as he's stalking his victims and stuff. It's kind of creepy.
What stage is it in?
Last I heard, it was being edited. They took it out to Nevada, and they were shopping it around in Los Angeles to different people.
So you wrote it, but are you also in it?
Yes, I actually star in it.
Ooh,
so
cool.
Yeah, so I play Michael, the crazy guy. So I go from comedy to nut job in a heartbeat.
Fun to play the crazy guy.
Yeah, actually was. Yeah.
Get in touch with lead writer and producer of the Misplaced Comedy Group, Steve Grabo of Northport. Call 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 1-877-428-8255. Or email us at gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. You can comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. And you also have a background as a studio musician and in various bands. What's going on with that?
We took another hiatus right after Back for More Abuse, the last CD. And so I used to have a band called Iris back in the mid to late 90s before I started working with Adventure Radio. And we were recording a bunch of songs that kind of like fizzled out in the studio. So I decided to revamp those songs as well as some new material that has always been a thing I've always wanted to do. You know, everyone wants to be a rock star.
Of course.
Of course. You know, and I figure if some people like Bruce Willis and William Shatner can have a CD out there, why not me? And you know, with my production background, I can probably record something and try and make something of it as well.
Do you have what you would describe as a genre in this?
I really don't know. I consider it a mix between Foo Fighters and Pink Floyd. So, I mean, if you can combine the two in any way, you know, I'm always a big alternative music fan, and I'm always a big progressive rock fan. You know, mm-hmm. Yes, and Moody Blues and all those guys. So if you combine all of that together, that's the kind of stuff I'd like to write.
On the new CD, Grabo, you told me you're playing all the instruments yourself.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I've played with a bunch of musicians. I've collaborated with a lot of musicians that are well known in the past, and
like who?
I've taken songwriting classes with Jim Messina. If you know Loggins and Messina, you know, "Mama Don't Dance," and
mm-hmm.
"Daddy Don't Run."
I know the song.
Okay, and and then he was also with Buffalo Springfield back mm-hmm. in the '60s. And when I was in South Carolina, I met up with him, and we had a lot of things in common. And I hosted his shows at on Hilton Head Island when he would come in and play. I would introduce him as he's coming up and things like that. And I got to meet guys like Three Dog Night and Fuel and Stone Temple Pilots and guys like that with working at the Adventure Radio. And I got along with pretty much everybody. And so I try to keep in touch with as much as I can with them.
So how do you play every instrument on an entire CD?
Lots of layers, lots of tracks.
This is actual instruments, not just electronic stuff?
Oh, no, they're actual instruments. I do some drum augmentation on the computer, but I play everything, bass, keyboards, guitars, and stuff. And a lot of the music in Misplaced Comedy Group I do now, too. It's not just us sitting around a microphone tapping on a floor tom singing Bin Laden Banana Boat song anymore.
Right.
It's the productions. You can definitely tell going through all of the Misplaced Comedy CDs how our productions have gotten better throughout the years, and especially in this new one. And so I'm hoping to take it with my music as well. So.
And you've already done a video of one of the songs, Lust. We're going to put that on our website. Where will people be able to get the CD?
You'll be able to get it eventually through StephenGrabo.com. You can friend me up on Twitter at TheRealGrabo. And all the new news will be coming out on that pretty soon. And the CD should be available first week in November.
And what's next for the Misplaced Comedy Group in 2012?
As soon as the CD's out, we're back in the studio. We're recording again. And we got a lot of people that came back to be involved with the Misplaced Comedy again that were in the past, from the Afghan Files to now. So it's going to be a bigger group and stronger.
And can people see the group live in Southwest Florida?
I certainly hope so. Soon.
Okay.
As soon as we find a home, yes.
Great. That's all the time we have. Thank you so much for joining us, Steve.
Thank you for having me. It's fantastic being here. Thank you.
Stephen Grabo is the lead writer and producer with the Misplaced Comedy Group. He lives in Northport. Information about the group and a video of one of its stand-up skits is at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. We'll be back in a moment with Southwest Florida sculptor Dave Callum and his 3D clay creations. You're listening to WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida.
Yeah, I do. Beyond the rainbows of your imagination, through clouds at your eyes, tear away the frenzies of your imagination. The truth just makes you
Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live Arts Edition. I'm Amy Tardiff. Southwest Florida artist Dave Callum has been a professional sculptor for 17 years. He has a gallery at the Promenade Shops in Bonita Springs and one in an old renovated fishing cottage at Riverside Park in Bonita. His public art can be seen inside Bonita City Hall. He makes 3D clay movie posters, nautical chart tiles, 3D custom golf holes, and his newest venture, celebrity and custom voodoo dolls. His work has a Tim Burton-esque Nightmare Before Christmas look and feel to it. Dave joins us in the studio now to talk about his work. Thanks for being here, Dave.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's nice to meet you.
Check out his work at thepinfish.com and then call and ask a question or comment about his sculptures at 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK or send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Dave, you say you're an artist by process of elimination. So how long have you been drawn to making art, particularly sculpture?
Ever since I was a kid, I guess I've been sculpting and yeah, I really enjoy it. And it was kind of staying as an artist was a process of elimination because there's really not very much that I'm able to do, I find. So it's worked out pretty well.
Were your creations always whimsical?
Yes, they were. And again, it's the only thing I think that I can do pretty well. So I kind of stick with that.
Why do you call your gallery the Pinfish Gallery? What is that about?
When we were kids, I moved to Bonita in 1975. And when we were kids, in order to make money, we'd sit on our dock and we'd catch pinfish and stick them in a bait bucket and run them down the road to Jim's Tackle Shop on Bonita Beach Road. And they'd give us a dime for each one that stayed alive, which, yeah.
That couldn't have been easy.
It was not easy. No, it wasn't easy at all because most of them would die. You'd have the problem, okay, if we only have like three or four pinfish in here, then most of them will live, but we're only going to make 40 cents, or we could pack it full and most of them will die. So it was always about the same, but we spared more pinfish by just taking a few.
So that memory leaves you to the gallery?
Yes. Yeah, that's where it came from.
Cool. Your website is worth looking at, not only for the fantastical sculptures, but simply for the statements you make on there. The homepage says, and I'm quoting here, "The unsellable art of Dave Kellum, able to imagine and create anything, able to sell nothing. Where are my kids going to keep all this crap when I die? Think of that, won't you?" And once one enters the site, does this wonderful sense of humor come out in the artwork?
I certainly hope so. I have a really good time making these things, and I hope that people can see that when they're looking at my pieces. And I think that art should be enjoyed and shouldn't really be taken too seriously, which doesn't mean that no talent should have to go into it. But I think it should be fun to look at and fun to laugh at, and I think that makes people more comfortable looking at a piece if they can recognize it and B, kind of laugh at it and enjoy it.
One of the first collections of sculpture you create that we can see there is called Steampunk. What is that?
Steampunk is a kind of a science fiction style, imagining from like Victorian times how they would think of the future being. So it's steam-powered rocket ships and blimps that can go into space and things like that. A lot of bolts, a lot of steel, a lot of industrial-looking things.
However, you've got there a series of ironclad gopher tortoises doing something.
Yes.
How does that fit in?
The gopher tortoises are... They're dressed up as the Monitor and the Merrimack, and they are kind of in a little arena with waves on top of them. And I don't know where that came from. That one just sometimes we'll start making things, and it'll just start changing and evolving. And that's part of the fun part too, is to see where each piece goes. And that one got a little weird. Yeah,
but it's adorable.
I like it. Thank you very much. Thanks. I like that one too.
And we have a call now from Jackie, who happens to be a friend of ours. Jackie, welcome to the show.
Hey, Amy. Hey, Dave. Great to be with you guys.
This is Jackie Leiden from NPR. It's so wonderful to hear from you, Jackie. And I know that you're a friend and fan of Dave's work.
It's so wonderful to be thinking about Bonita and Dave's art.
So, what do you think of Dave's art?
You know, I just want to say that we met Dave on a rainy Friday night at his cottage over there by the river, and our friend, our dear friend, the city councilman John Spear, had directed us to him. And, you know, Dave, you forgot to say that one of your amazing credentials is that you've been my mom's art teacher.
Oh, that's right.
So
Jackie, thanks
art.
For calling. I teach art sometimes. I don't enjoy it too much, but Jackie's mom is a really cool lady, and that was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Jackie, what's special about Dave's sculptures in your mind?
You know, I am privileged to know a lot of wonderful artists down there. Paul Arsenault, Muffy Clark Gill, who, of course, worked at the station. And everybody has a different sensibility and wonderfully does something that, to me, is reflective of the region. But with Dave, you really get Dave's quirkiness. And Dave, you are much too shy and self-effacing. I mean, I just love, Amy, you pointed it out, the way his website says, who's going to buy this stuff? Come on, you know, make room. My kids don't want to have to clean it out of the attic after I die. Think of that. He's anything you give him, he can interpret. We worked on, I love these little voodoo dolls, and you can custom order those, and they can be your favorite sports figure you want to stick pins in or some, you know, quasi-pseudo-celebrity. And with my mom, Amy, she had just had a really bad setback, a slight stroke from which I'm happy to say she's recovered. And Dave would just hang in there with her and say, well, Arlene, what do you want to make? And they made a pair of hands. Do you remember that, Dave?
Oh, I do indeed, yeah.
Ceramic hands?
Yeah. Big ones. Remember whose hands she said they were?
I do, yeah. yes, I do.
Anybody we know?
Anyway, Michelangelo.
Yeah, Michelangelo. Oh, wow.
And his paramour. So anyway, you know, we still have those, and we've kind of made them into a fountain. And he has this marvelous Alice in Wonderland series, which some museum should pick up. And, Amy, I think there's just not enough room for whimsy in our lives. I mean, we know we need it. We go and see Tim Burton at galleries or we see his movies.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people in your area are privileged to be able to just drop by Dave's work and kind of see that sense of whimsy. I mean, these are tough times, and please take home a little voodoo doll, you know?
Or order one of somebody you know. Custom made. Well, thank you so much for adding your perspective to Dave's work, Jackie. It's very special to have you on the phone.
Thanks. It's great to be part of this.
Thanks, Jackie.
Thank you so much. So, Dave, also on the steampunk area, you've got Young Frankenstein, which you've got listed in that area and in the 3D movie posters and album covers area. What led you to creating those?
The Young Frankenstein piece I did, one, because I loved that movie. I thought it was a really funny movie. And I also wanted to do something in black and white. And that's why I did that one, because I thought it would go well in black and white. And, yeah, I like that one, too. So I think it worked okay. I hate glazing. I hate colors. And every time I make something, I think, okay, this one I'm not going to color. I always like it when I just sculpt something and it dries. That's my favorite part. And then glazing it, I always feel like I ruin it at that point. So I think I might try to do more just black and white things and use underglazes instead of shiny overglazes. I think I might just go with more of a dull look.
But a lot of your stuff is bright, beautiful color, so.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff I did a lot of years ago, too. So, yeah, I think they're getting more dull and more matte looking as time goes on.
But, yeah, well, it depends, I guess. If someone custom orders, you'll make whatever.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely, absolutely, yes.
Now, how do you make them? These are intricate, tiny, little sculptures with such detail.
Well, now I do it with glasses. I didn't used to have to do that, but I use glasses.
You'll join the club.
Yeah. And so that really helps.
What
I wish
kind
I had
of tools, though?
Like a little, just a needle tool and an X-Acto knife is one of my favorite tools, but just like a little dentist tools, like little dental pick kind of looking things.
Are you making from pictures or your own mind? Or?
It's a combination of both. For the movie posters, I'll go and watch the movie and think of different scenes that I'd like to combine and different elements that I'd like to bring to the sculpture. And, and then throw in a little imagination while you're making something. You think, okay, now what if this happened or what if that happened? And then things change a little bit and things change a little bit. And then it's fun to see the end product.
How long does an average, let's say, the movie poster take to make?
Usually around a month. Yeah, usually it takes about a month.
We're talking to Bonita Springs sculptor Dave Kellum. Our phone number is 1-877-GCU-TALK, and we're on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Is the technique for the movie posters similar to your nautical chart tiles, which are basically 3D reproductions of paper charts?
No, it's a totally different thing. And the nautical charts, I used to actually sell quite a few of those. And then I started getting cocky, thinking I could sell anything. So I started doing the movie posters and things like that, which nobody buys. So, but it's just way more fun. The charts, I try to get every little mangrove island and get every little detail. And it's just, it's boring. It's really boring. But they sell pretty well. So I'm kind of moving back to that just because I need money. But
who buys those?
A lot of people in Bonita Bay bought those things. There are a lot of them in Bonita Bay.
What about the 3D custom golf holes?
Those, nobody's bought any of those yet. I've only done, actually, that's not true. Bonita Bay, their Veranda Sales Center in Fort Myers, they bought two big ones. But other than that, nobody's bought those yet. But I'm going to try to start peddling those as well.
Mm-hmm. That's somebody maybe... I got a hole in one on this really hard course. I want to document it.
That's what I was thinking.
Oh, that's
yes.
Cool. Yeah. What is the piece that you made for Bonita Springs City Hall?
That is, I don't remember how big it is. It's pretty big. I think it's about maybe 16 or 18 feet wide and maybe 6 or 7 feet tall. And the background is a big map of the Imperial River. And then, one level in front of that are plates that I made, clay plates that show historic scenes from Bonita's past. And then in front of those plates, I've put a sculpture of a historical figure from Bonita Springs in front of those plates. So that was a fun one to make. That was good. That was a fun one. Yeah.
And these are replicas of real people.
Yes, they are. Chris Busk is on there, and Charlie Weeks, and Grandma Johnson from Mound Key, and... it's been a while. I haven't seen it in a little while, but yeah, that was a fun one. Yeah.
So that would be really interesting to go down and see that, I think.
If there's ever a reason to go to Bonita City Hall, and I'd love for you to take a look at that. Well, I don't know if that's it, but if you're there, I hope you take a look at it.
And now for what we've been dying to know. We've been teasing it. Jackie mentioned it. When did you start making these celebrity and custom voodoo dolls?
Maybe 6 months ago. After people stopped buying larger sculptures, I figured I'd start making smaller things for less than $200 that somebody might be more willing to buy. I've kind of proven myself wrong on that as well. My business skills are pretty weak. But they're fun, and I'm going to start doing political figures and see how that goes, try to get rid of a few of those.
Why voodoo dolls? Where did you come up with that?
Well, I don't know. It just voodoo is just a good word, and it kind of catches people's attention. And so I figured if I just gave them soft arms and legs and you could stick a needle in them, I guess you can call them voodoo dolls. It's just a good word. It's kind of a catchy word. And
who have you made so far?
Fidel Castro and Sarah Palin, the Joker, George C. Scott. Amy Winehouse, long before she died, and
you didn't stick anything in her, did you?
Absolutely, no. I loved her. Yeah, that was sad. Many more. Yeah.
You're not doing this one alone, though. You have a textile designer you're working with.
My wife, yes.
Oh,
my
okay.
My wife makes the clothes for them, and she's wonderful, and she's very, very talented, and so she sews the clothes for me, and. Helps me design the clothes, and it's great having her.
What are some of the other materials you're using to make them?
We use alpaca hair a lot for their hair, and old vintage clothes and doilies for lace, and whatever springs for, we did Slash, the guitar player from Guns N' Roses, and we used springs for his hair, and they turned out pretty well, I think. And anything I can find that's cheap.
That works,
yes.
Now, they do have this Tim Burton-esque Nightmare Before Christmas look to them. And is that intentional?
It is, yes. Yes, I like to take and just, I don't know, maybe take the spring out of somebody's step when I turn them into a voodoo doll. I think they're more interesting that way. And again, I could be wrong. I don't know because I haven't sold too many.
How would someone get their own voodoo doll made?
They can either come in and sit with me, and I've had a few people do that, and that's always a lot of fun if they just want to come and spend 45 minutes with me at the promenade, and we can sit and just have a bottle of wine or something, and I'll sculpt you, and then I have my wife, Amy, dress it when I get home after it's fired and glazed, and then that's it. So they can just give me a phone call if they wanted to and come sit with me, or they can just send me photos to my email address, and I can work that way as well.
Have you practiced sticking anyone with pins?
Sarah Palin's got a few holes in her. But, yeah, I think that's the only one.
Do you promise that they work?
Eventually, all the people that you stick will die, and that's the only guarantee that I can make. So, yeah.
What else do you have on the horizon for ideas here?
I've got a sculpture that I've started of the set from David Letterman, and it'll have all the old cheesy Batman show that used to be on. Mm-hmm. All those are as old people. They're all going to be the guests with their outfits on. And then remember when Drew Barrymore flashed Dave on his birthday?
Yeah.
This was years ago. Catwoman will be up there doing that. And so I've got that working, and I've got a big aquarium train thing that I've been working on for many years, and I'm finally going to finish that. And then some more voodoo doll ideas as well.
Can people see you working at either of your galleries?
Certainly, yes. Usually at Promenade. On Thursdays and Fridays, I'm there. And if anybody wants to come sit with me, they can just call me and I can meet them down there. And I'd be happy to just shoot the breeze with anybody and
watch you do this.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I like that. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. Thank you so much. That's all the time we have. Thank you so much, Dave, for explaining this wonderful, whimsical work you do.
It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Information about Dave Kellum's sculptures is at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. And you can comment on our statewide blog on our website, click on Florida Talks, or on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. This is WGCU Fort Myers, 90.1 FM, WMKO Marco, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida. For Richard Chinqui and Luke Martin, I'm Amy Tardiff. Have a great afternoon.
What's this? The hanging mistletoe. They kiss? Why, that looks so unique. They're inspired. The gathering around to hear his story. Roasting chestnuts on a fire. What's this? What's this? In here, they've got a little tree. How queer. And who would ever think? And why? They're covering it with tiny little things. They've got electric lights on strings. And there's a smile on everyone. So now correct me if I'm wrong. This looks like fun. This looks like fun. Oh, could it be? I got my wish. What's this? Oh my, what now? The children are asleep. But look, there's nothing underneath. No ghouls, no witches here to scream and scare them or ensnare them. Only little cozy things secure inside their dreamland. What's this? The monsters are all missing and the nightmares can't be found. And in their place there seems to be good feeling all around. Instead of screams, I swear I can hear music in the air. The smell of cakes and pies are absolutely everywhere. The sights, the sounds, they're everywhere and all around. I've never felt so good before. This empty place inside of me is filling up. I simply cannot get enough. I want it, oh I want it, oh I want it for my own. I've got to know, I've got to know. It is this place that I have found. What is this?